Sunday Morning with Rob Cowan is a perfectly normal production for BBC Radio 3 with studio production this morning by Lyndon Jones.
Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony. And Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini. Shostakovich's most celebrated symphony and Rachmaninoff at his most irresistible. The Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, live in Radio 3 Live in Concert. Wednesday night at 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
Well, now it's 12 o'clock and time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay. And today, another chance to hear a programme first broadcast in September 2008 with Jennifer Wirth, the author of Call the Midwife books, who died last year.
Jennifer Wirth was a nurse, a midwife, ward sister and night sister from 1953 until 73, working mainly in London and mainly in the East End. Her first passion was, and still is, music, and she's a fellow of the London College of Music, having taught piano and singing for about 25 years and still singing, I think, Jennifer, in choirs all over
Europe.
Yes, I
am. I more or less lost my voice now, but I can sing a very thin soprano.
And you gave us this fascinating slice of social history in Call the Midwife, one book, and Shadow of the Workhouse. And there's the most amazing cast of characters, isn't there? Dockers, nuns, pimps, prostitutes, you name it. I mean, it outdoes EastEnders any day.
That's nice of you to say so, and I fully agree. No, it was a very fascinating time. The docks were still open, you see. The people were the survivors of the war, and everybody was thankful to be just alive, because most, well, nearly all the families had lost people during the war.
Now, as I suggested, you've combined this with music, which I suppose is both a means of escape and a sort of transcending thing for you. And you went to lots of music, didn't you? Not only took part in it.
Oh, goodness, it's more than transcending. It's more than an escape. It's been my passion and obsession since I was a very young child. To her eternal credit, my mother had me taught to play the piano. But sadly, I was taught a bad technique, and you never get over it. Mm. And whilst I practised endlessly, I mean, even as a young child, I would spend hours and hours at the piano.
I think the first music that we're going to hear comes from a performance you attended, right? Must have been very near the beginning of your career.
It was when I was 16, and we weren't a musical family at all, but I knew that I loved music, and I'd heard singing on the radio, and I'd also heard of a place called Covent Garden, and I thought, well, if other people go there, I shall go there, and so I did, and I went time after time. The first one I ever heard was Aida, and I was absolutely hooked then, and I went always in the gods for half a crown. That's 2 shillings and 6p. It was during this time, it was the season of, I think, about 51 or 2 or 3, when I heard that somebody called Maria Callas was going to sing. And the price was 4 shillings, not half a crown. I thought, well, she'd better be good for 4 shillings. Yeah. So I attended, and I saw Callas 5 times in the period that I was going to Covent Garden.
Well, we're going to hear her in La Traviata, Act 2, Scene 1. Do you reckon that it was worth the 4 bob you paid?
It was worth any amount of money that you could possibly pay. Because whilst there is a cult almost of Maria Callas, people only hear the records. And that was really just over half of the performance. The rest was her presence on stage. She eliminated everything else. You sat sort of gripping your seat, leaning forwards, and your eyes couldn't see anything. Your ears couldn't hear anything else.
Allo, se vero scritto vi lasciava, però l'attendo, t'amerai vederti.
E qui non mi sorprenda, lascia che m'allontani.
A live performance from, I believe, La Scala, but any live performance gives a completely different take to a studio recording because there is the interaction between the performer and the audience, and you can feel it. Even on a record, you can feel the difference.
Well, we heard Maria Callas singing Violetta, Giuseppe Di Stefano, Alfredo, with the Orchestra of La Scala Milan, conducted by Carlo Maria Giulini. Music from Act 2, Scene 1 of Verdi's La Traviata. You were in Paris for a while, in the late 50s, weren't you, a few years after that?
After I finished nursing, I more or less had to give up my own musical studies. I mean, for one thing, we were working a 60-hour week. It is so exhausting physically, mentally, emotionally, and I just wanted to get away. So I went to Paris, and I went as an au pair girl. And whilst I was there, I went to the Russian Orthodox Church in La Rue d'Arou because a friend had told me, you want to go and hear the music. So I did. Now, if you've ever been to the Orthodox, it is a service from 9 till 12, and people come in and go out all the time. There are no seats, you don't sit. And I used to creep in and sit on the floor next to the choir. And the music is absolutely ravishing.
Господи, услышь. Услыши молитву мою.
Lord, Hear My Prayer by Arkhangelsky, the Russian Metropolitan Church Choir of Paris, directed by Nicholas Afonsky. Now, of course, in Paris, I imagine you heard lots of popular music of the time as well, Jennifer Worth.
Not a lot, but somebody told me you really ought to go and hear Edith Piaf whilst I was there, so I did. And the main memory I have of her, remember I was very young, was thinking, how can anyone possibly be so old? Which is a bit rude, but that's what I thought.
She was very diminutive, wasn't she?
Tiny, mm. tiny.
Like a little sparrow.
And very wrinkled. Mm. And she was only about 45, mm. only about 25 years older than me, but she looked years older than that.
Well, I think, rather like some of your characters in the East End, she'd sort of
she'd
lived it up a bit, hadn't she?
Yes.
And had a difficult time, too.
Yes.
Sort of a tragic yes. time. Mm.
Yes, she had.
Le jour où tu m'as rencontré était un jour triste à mourir, et je traînais dans mes pensées un chagrin à n'en plus finir. Mais il a suffi que tu viennes pour que j'oublie toutes mes peines. C'est merveilleux quand on est tous les deux, le bonheur nous surveille. C'est merveilleux quand on est amoureux, les beaux jours se réveillent. C'est merveilleux, la vie est peinte en bleu, à grands coups de soleil. Puisque je t'aime et que tu m'aimes, c'est merveilleux. Nous passerons toute la vie à chanter un si grand amour, une chanson si jolie, la vie n'a pas assez de jours. Nous offrons une harmonie qui ne sera jamais finie. C'est merveilleux quand on est tous les deux, le bonheur nous surveille. C'est merveilleux quand on est amoureux, les beaux jours se réveillent. C'est merveilleux, la vie est peinte en bleu, à grands coups de soleil. Et que tu m'aimes, c'est merveilleux.
C'est merveilleux, Edith Piaf, and she was singing with an orchestra. We never get very many details about these orchestras, but we do know it was conducted by Guy Lippertz and recorded in Paris on the 23rd of April 1946. So that was some 10 years before you
yes,
heard her sing there.
It would have been, yes.
Are you keen, Jennifer, on chamber music?
I love it passionately, yes. When I returned to London, I'd never much heard chamber music before then. I thought it must be frightfully pompous. But when I returned to London, I was working probably at the London Hospital, Whitechapel. I met, and I can't remember how, Rosalinda Gover, and her husband, Gerald Gover. He was at the Sadler's Wells Theatre in Mosby Avenue. He was assistant conductor and more or less everything. She was 25 years older and was a Viennese Jew, escaped from Germany before the Holocaust. And she and her husband set up a musical centre in Arkwright Road, Hampstead, for Jews who had survived the war. And I went many, many times to their house. I did hear piano and violin. I didn't know what it was at the time, but I thought it was so beautiful and it's lived in my mind for years and years and years. Then, oh, goodness knows, 20 years later, I was playing with a girl, and one day she brought me this music and she said, do you think you could manage this? And then we'll do it together somewhere. And as soon as I started playing, I thought, that's it. That's the one that I heard at Rosenlander's. And so I've taken the central movement, which is a most gorgeous duo between piano and violin.
Thank you.
That was Anthony Marwood and Susan Tomes with the Sonatina in G, Opus 100 by Dvorak, of which that was the Larghetto. Did you find in your work, I mean, you must have seen huge suffering, and reading the books, you obviously encountered it many times, but were you also amazed at the kind of resilience of human nature too?
Yes, you are. And the resilience of human nature never ceases to amaze me. I look around me, I saw a man on the, just coming on from Euston Station, a black man, not more than 40. He looked as though he'd had a stroke. He was walking so slowly, and all the people rushing past him, one arm was hanging limply, and not just suffering, but determination and courage in his face was absolutely remarkable. And that, of course, is what you see everywhere if you look for it.
A remarkable singer next, Jennifer Wirth, and perhaps one of our most loved singers of the last 50 years.
I think she's one of the greatest singers of the last century. Janet Baker. I have never heard anything of Janet Baker that is not perfection. It's the quality of her voice to begin with. And it's the musicianship, and it's the involvement, and diction, language is perfect.
And this piece in particular, do you like?
Well, I've chosen everything that I've either heard or played myself. And, oh, long time ago, 1970s, I suppose, she was doing a music club, you know, a local music club recital in a school hall. And she sang King David.
By Howells.
Yes. I think, truly, that whatever she sings is glorious.
He called for the music of a
Now, I've sung that myself. It's difficult, very difficult to sing. The intonation is hard and you don't get much help from the piano.
It's quite spare, really, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is. You're very exposed. Gosh.
King David by Herbert Howells. We heard Janet Baker with Martin Easep. Just as Janet Baker had that absolutely identifiable quality to her singing, I think our next pianist had something about his playing which also marked him out, didn't it?
Horowitz, that old magician. Yeah. Goodness knows how he managed it. I saw him in the Festival Hall in, I think, about 1980 or something, and I couldn't believe it. And he was at Scarlatti playing. It was the first. And I thought, oh, well, he must use that technique for the Baroque music. But no, it was all the way through. And I thought, he'll get a muscular spasm or something in his arms if he uses his fingers like that. But no.
Well, describe how he was doing it.
Well, he was completely flat-fingered like this. Mm. I just don't know how he can do it.
So the hands were held out like Tommy Cooper.
Exactly, exactly like that. And it was all the time. He did something magical with that piano.
Thank you.
The Nocturne in C sharp minor, opus 27, number 1, by Chopin, played by Vladimir Horowitz. We're going to hear some music of a very different nature now. I wonder how you came across it.
Celtic music, yes, indeed. I'd started studying singing. I was 32-ish, I think. And it was my husband who started me. He just said, you know, I hear you singing around the house and singing to the baby, and I think you ought to get your voice trained. And I did. And from the very first lesson with a singing teacher, I was an obsessive singer. And I wanted to have an instrument that I could accompany myself, because a piano is not suitable for that sort of thing. And I suddenly woke up in the night, I thought, the harp, that's it. I'll learn the harp and accompany myself. And that introduced me to the Celtic folk song. And by that I mean the Hebridean, the Nordic song, which are partly Nordic. I couldn't find any records of Celtic folk song sung with the harp, as I was doing, but the records of Kenneth McKellar singing are very, very beautiful. And the one that I've chosen is the Sky Fisher song, which is leading to the land of the dead, over the waters to where the souls of the dead depart.
Father, again, misty isle, the Isle of Sky doth show. Jagged line of blue Coolins in the evening glow. Purple water troughs with cutting clean my boat cleaves through. And tonight I'll greet thee, moon ye and doom. By the glimmer of thine eyes, in blackest night I'll know. By the light of love that's kindled, my love I'll show. By the joy that leaps and laughs there like the dancing sea, I know, Monian, thou lovest me. Now the misty isle, the Isle of Sky doth loom, and her light shines softly seaward in the twilight gloom. Like the light of love that travels twixt my heart and thine. And tonight I'll greet thee, O heart of mine. By the glimmer of thine eyes, I
It's a Scottish version of the Isle of the Dead and Sharon, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, they are wonderful songs. Mm-hmm. I learned a great many of them from the Marjorie Kennedy Fraser songbooks. She and her daughter collected from the Hebridean Isles folk songs. I think she was working between about 1890 and 1910 or 15. And there are two volumes of these magnificent songs.
Well, we heard that Hebridean folk song, The Sky Fisher's Song, sung by Kenneth McKellar, with an orchestra conducted by Bob Sharples. You mentioned playing the harp for that kind of music, Jennifer Worth, but you also play, I think, a Paragon harp?
I met Bill Morgan. He was playing in a cafe, an Englishman, and he was playing this, and I was riveted. I thought, what is that magnificent sound? And, oh, God, I've got to have a go at that, you see. And this was in, I think, Watford or Harrow or somewhere, reasonably near to where I live. So, of course, I went and talked to him and looked at this wonderful instrument, and we arranged for me to have lessons. Well, I had to get a Paraguayan harp because it's not the same as the Classic nor the... any other harp. It's, for one thing, the strings are more close together. The technique is quite different. Whereas on the Classic or any the classical harp, you have two or three fingers always on the strings so that you don't lose your way. With a Paraguayan harp, you're all the time pulling off the strings. So you're throwing the sound up like stars, they go upwards.
Thank you.
so gorgeous.
We heard Pajaro Campana, the bellbird, a traditional Paraguayan piece from Bill Morgan, his Paraguayan harp. Jennifer Worth, you talked about Horowitz and you talked about Callas and People of the Past. Are there living exponents that you particularly admire on the piano, for example?
Oh dear, that's a difficult question. I admire everybody who can play. I really do. I find it very difficult to listen to people who are critical of others. And I know the difficulty and the life work it is to produce, do anything. I mean, even as a very limited pianist, singer, harpist, anything that I do, I know how much work has gone into it. And anyone and everybody who is a performer, I admire tremendously. As I've got older, I can't stop playing Bach, I'm afraid. I'm sure my poor husband hears nothing but Bach all day, well, in the house, every time I'm playing. And I used to love playing Chopin and Liszt and much more romantic stuff. Now it's just all Bach. But I do love to hear somebody who can really play it. And Angela Hewitt really can. And I heard her, I think it was about the year 2000 at the Wigmore Hall, doing the two books of Bach's Prelude and Fugues. And I just picked up one almost at random. I mean, you can't go wrong, can you? Out of 48, you could choose any one of them, and this is the G major.
Thank you.
Do you know something about playing Bach? I think if for some reason he is kind to the amateur musician like myself. I'm extremely limited. I don't want to give anyone the impression that I'm good. I'm very limited. But when I'm with Barker, he just seems to be gentle with you. And it was Glenn Gould, I believe, years and years ago, who said that you can play Bach at any speed and it'll still sound beautiful. Well, I cannot play that at that speed, but it sounds just as beautiful to me in my own room by myself. And I always feel a sort of paternal hand on my shoulder. That's perfectly all right. If you made a mistake, my dear, it doesn't matter in the slightest.
Well, I think that it's so intellectually satisfying on the one hand, but with such a strong, people don't always realise this, but once you know it, such a strong emotional underlining feeling to it. It's not overstated, the emotion, but it's just there.
Yes, it certainly is.
Well, we heard Angela Hewitt there playing the Prelude and Fugue in G by Bach from the Well-Tempered Clavier, Book 2. Now, we've covered a lot of your activities, Jennifer West, and I must say they are admirable in their scale and their number.
Admirable is not a word I like to use. I just do things because I enjoy it. It's been a life of intense fun.
We'll leave the details of gynecology for another time. Just go straight on, I think, to the Vivaldi, which summarises your love of choral music.
Well, as my voice was fading, and I regret to say that soprano voice is the first to slip, I started choral music, you see, and I've had immense fun. It's almost been the best of the lot because, you see, I got rather bored with a choir that meets every week, so I just do scratch things, and where you have to go with your music, and you do a couple of rehearsals, and then you're on. And I also sing with the Open University Chapel Choir, which does cathedral choir boys holidays. You know, every cathedral has to employ that sort of choir. Well, I just love it. And with the scratch choir, you can go abroad. If you can sing, you're wanted anywhere in the world. And I've done a lot of European trips. And I've sung Vivaldi in Venice under Sir David Wilcox. And they have been just wonderful experiences.
Thank you.
Oh, it's just wonderful to sing that. And in a church in Venice, you can't get better than that, can you?
Gloria in Excelsis Deo from the Gloria of Vivaldi. We heard there the choir of King's College, Cambridge, with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, directed by Sir David Wilcox. Well, Jennifer Worth, we didn't have time for as much midwifery as we might have done.
People
can read about that in your books, and actually it was only because you've got such a passion for music that we didn't even need to trespass upon those grounds.
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I could talk about music all night. It's been wonderful.
Jennifer Worth, who died last year, talking to Michael Barclay in 2008. Next Sunday, Michael's guest will be the social historian and the curator of royal palaces, Lucy Worsley. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3, and the producer of today's edition was Chris Marshall.
World on 3 is headed for Glasgow this week for the world's biggest winter music festival, Celtic Connections. Once again, we'll be setting up camp in the Glasgow Royal Concert Hall at the Late Night Sessions, the place for meeting up after hours and sharing tunes, songs and crack with festival artists and audiences alike. I'm Marianne Kennedy, and I'll be taking up residency for 4 nights at the festival in the company of some stellar musicians, and I'll also be bringing you some world music highlights from the Celtic Connections concerts themselves. Music from the world over, hosted by the Celtic World. Please join us starting from Tuesday night at 11 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. The time now is 1 o'clock. Time for the news with David Cornett.
The Afghan government has announced that it's planning to hold a meeting with the Taliban in the coming weeks in an attempt to start formal peace talks. BBC News understands that a meeting will take place in Saudi Arabia before the militant group sets up an office in the Gulf state of Qatar. The Taliban has previously refused to recognise President Karzai's government as legitimate. The Work and Pension Secretary, Ian Duncan Smith, has given the clearest indication yet that the government wants the Chief Executive of the Royal Bank of Scotland to forego his share bonus of almost £1 million. In an interview this morning, Mr Duncan Smith said that no one would be happier than the government if Stephen Hester chose to reject the offer. His Labour shadow, Liam Byrne, said the government was wrong not to use its majority shareholding in the bank to force Mr Hester to hand back the bonus. The Syrian capital, Damascus, has been the scene of some of the most intense fighting there since the start of the uprising 10 months ago. Around 2,000 government troops, backed by tanks, are said to be attempting to regain control of suburbs held by army deserters. Opposition groups say at least 30 people have been killed. Inspectors from the United Nations nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, have begun a 3-day visit to Iran. The mission is designed to address evidence that the country is conducting nuclear weapons research. The head of the inspection team said he hoped Iran would cooperate with efforts to assess the military dimensions of its nuclear program. The infection, which led to the deaths of 3 babies at a neonatal unit in Belfast, has been found at another hospital in the city. The Pseudomonas bacterium at the Ulster Hospital was again found in water outlets. No babies being treated there have tested positive for the infection so far, though screening is continuing. And the weather: heavy rain will continue across Wales and southwest England, turning to snow over the hills, with some scattered showers in Northern Ireland, northern and western Scotland and northeast England. Elsewhere, it'll stay mainly fine, with some sunny spells. BBC News and weather at 1:02.
With David Cornett. I'm Jill Anderson. Very good afternoon to you. Looking ahead to 2 o'clock, our Sunday concert is a concert given by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Andrew Gourlay. We'll be hearing the first UK performance of Andrew Norman's Unstuck. Then Daniel Hope will be the soloist in Britten's Violin Concerto. And we'll also hear Shostakovich's Symphony No. 10. That all starts at 2 o'clock. But time now for the early music show. Here's Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to the show. We're looking at the work of 2 17th century Italian composers today. not exactly household names, but important in that they were both right at the forefront at some of the new developments that were happening in music at the time. They were more or less contemporaries, but whilst Tarquinio Merula spent much of his time as a church musician, Marco Uccellini was employed at some of the grandest courts of Italy. Both were violinists, though, at a time when the instrument was really coming into its own, and later on we'll be hearing some lovely early violin pieces by Uccellini, which show some of the very latest experiments in technique. But we're going to start with Merula, and a piece entitled, not very promisingly it must be said, La Posteria. It's an instrumental canzona, a form which, as its name suggests, was traditionally based on a part song or chanson, although composers like Merula gradually began to invent their own original canzonas. As you'll hear, this one's made up of several short sections, each with its own characteristic rhythm, from the gentle three-time opening to the robust 4-4 sections that are introduced by the harpsichord. In fact, these little multifaceted canzonas were very significant in that they heralded the beginning of the idea of separate movements, what we now call, of course, the sonata. La Posteria, a canzona by Tarquinio Merula, performed there by La Ciaconna. It was recorded for us by the European Broadcasting Union, and the concert was given at the Church of Saint-Germain in Geneva. And we'll be hearing other highlights from the concert as we go through the programme. So just who was this Tarquinio Merula? Well, he was born in the last few years of the 1500s in or near Cremona, a town which was already fast becoming a centre of violin making. He first served as organist at the Church of the Incoronata, a beautiful Renaissance jewel of a building in Lodi, in the Lombardy region of northern Italy. And 8 years later, he'd moved up in the world as organist to the King of Poland, no less, at his castle in Warsaw. But by the time Merula reached 30, we find him back in Cremona as maestro di cappella at the cathedral. And it was here, surrounded by the fabulous medieval frescoes, that he began writing some of his most important sacred works. But as for Merula's style, well, he wasn't one to look backwards. Far from it. In fact, he took his inspiration from the very progressive ideas coming out of Venice at the time, new forms of music being explored by Monteverdi and Gabrielli that were characterised by great vocal clarity and by lines conceived in terms of harmony rather than complex webs of counterpoint as had been done in the past. This is Corde et Animo. With heart and soul, sing the glory of Christ in this saintly solemnity of Mary, the highest Mother of God.
Corde.